Hi everybody, Will Alexander from Will Alexander's Dog Show Tips. Today on the interview chair we have Mrs. Sue Forsyth Green. Sue grew up as the child of probably arguably the most famous handling team of all time. And I've asked her to reminisce with me about those times. So it's going to be a great time. So sit back and enjoy yourself.
Hi, everybody. Guess who I have today? I have Sue Forsyth Green. And welcome, Sue. It's good to see you.
Good to see you too, Will.
I'm going to talk to you, and I want to know all about you growing up with the most famous handling couple of all time. I want to know what impact it had on you. I want to know some of the stories. I want to know everything, Sue. So let's...
There's a lot to tell.
I'm sure there is. Well, I want this to be epic, so let's do that. No pressure, honey.
All right.
So start at the beginning as early as you can remember, okay? Because the first question I always ask is, when did you get involved with dogs? Well, I can't ask you that because
that was right. Best in show the night before I was born.
Yeah, so I can't use my regular questions with you, so you have to just...
Yeah,
you, we'll carry on, but let's start from the earliest memory.
I remember Mrs. Farrell's Smooth Fox Terriers that my mother had her breeding program, and we had 45 Fox Terriers in the kennel all the time. And, you know, we'd have a couple of litters every year. And I remember my job was to lead break these puppies. And I was probably 3 or 4 years old because they would walk on a lead for me because I was a kid.
Sure,
you know how dogs relate better to kids. So I had to lead break all these puppies. And then, you know, as a kid, you don't realize, well, this is your mother's next best and show winner. You know, this is your mother's next big special. Yep. And, you know, as I got older, I was like, oh yeah, I lead broke that puppy. I taught that puppy everything it knows. But that is probably one of my earliest memories. I do know that I finished my first dog when I was 3 years old, and it was a Japanese Chin owned by Dr. and Mrs. Gorfine. And the only reason I got to show this dog again, it didn't walk in the lead for my mother. So I had to show this dog. And there was somebody stewarding in the ring. I don't remember who told me this story, but they were stewarding, and I went to get this puppy up on the table. And the steward came over and asked me, do you need help getting your dog on the table? And I just looked at him and said, no, I can do it myself. So I ended up finishing that puppy for my mother, and of course I'm sure she billed for it, but anyway.
So you were born right into it. Do you remember, well, I'm sure you've heard many stories. How about, do you recall the story of when your mom and dad first met each other?
Oh, yeah. I think the first time my mother saw my father, she walked up to him and said, I don't like you, and turned around and walked away. My father happened to be standing with Henry Stecker, who my dad had worked for, and my father looked at Henry Stecker and said, who was that? And I think the next time they actually met was my mother was unloading her van. And in those days, you put a lot of dogs in an X-Pen together, different breeds, dogs, bitches. And my mother had put all of her dogs in this X-Pen, and a fight broke out. Jeez. And Dad is the one that walked in and broke up the fight. And I think that's where they actually started a dialogue and started to get to know each other.
He endeared himself to her, sort of, by breaking
Probably. My dad was quite good at that, as we know. He liked the ladies.
So, what year, do you know what year that was approximately?
The story goes that they were together for 15 years before they got married. And my father used to tell everyone that it's like buying a used car. You have to drive it before you buy it. And of course, there would be a whack. But that was, that was them. They were so funny together.
They were.
And you could tell they absolutely adored each other. And my dad, in his very dry, obnoxious sense of humor. But they were, it was very funny when he would tell that story.
I'm sure. And does Janie have a side of that story too?
She never really said much about that. I think my mother just absolutely adored my father, and to see their wedding pictures and pictures around there, that time, the look on her face was, she just adored that man.
Yeah. Those are, I want to get some of those pictures.
Oh, I've got some really good ones.
Well, good. Make sure you send them to me.
I will.
Can you, did they ever, I guess I'm sure they did, because we've heard stories. How did your mom get into dogs? Like, we know how you got into dogs. How did your mom get into dogs?
Well, my grandmother owned a kennel on Gray Street in Arlington, Massachusetts, which is how we came up with our kennel name, Gray Arlen. And my grandmother had Airedales, and I believe that was, I know for a fact that that was my mother's first show dog. Yeah, my mother showed an Airedale in obedience. Yeah. And I remember asking her, like, did you just really like a challenge? Or, to me, an Airedale would not be my ideal obedience dog, especially to start with. But that's how she started. And she was about 12 years old when she left home to go work in a kennel. And she
continued. You know what kennel that was?
I want to say it was a German Shepherd kennel in Massachusetts, but I don't remember the name of it. And she continued going to school. She went to a private Catholic school, and one of the nuns gave a bee, and my mother told me she was not a B student and she was not taking that. And that was her last day of school. She never graduated high school.
Yeah.
And the interesting thing is my father signed up for the Marines when he was 16 because his older brother was 18 and signed up, and he never graduated high school either.
Wow. Mm-hmm. I remember your mom telling me about Airedales. So I think she told me she won her first best and she won an Airedale, her own dog.
Could be. I don't recall what she won her first best and show on.
I think she told me it was in Canada because we were talking about Canadian shows, and she said she won a best and show on her own Airedale in Canada. So
I have a picture of her in that Airedale in front of the fireplace I will send you.
Oh, perfect. So how did Dad get into dogs?
My grandparents came over from Scotland with Scotties and Dachshunds, and my grandfather worked on large estates in the New York, Long Island area, and so he ended up running the kennels for some of these large estates, the wealthy people back in the day when they had 100 dogs in their own kennel. And so when he came back from World War II, that's what he started doing. And he worked for famous Whippet and Greyhound kennel by the name of Marta Meir. And he was married to his first wife at that point, and they had two children. But neither of them got into dogs. They didn't get bitten, I guess, like I did.
Well, you had it coming on both sides, too.
Yes, that too.
I can't imagine what it was like growing up there with all those different assistants coming in and out. And
you know, it's interesting because we didn't have a lot of different assistants. They came, they stayed.
Yeah.
Because they learned, you know, they were great teachers. And always offering help, even, you know, into when they were judging and stuff. I have people all the time come up to me and say, oh, your mother was so helpful when I was showing this dog to her, that dog. And my father, too. You know, that's what this business is all about, is passing on our knowledge to the next generation.
Well, I love when Mark and Wayne get together and I hear those stories. They're the best stories. So.
Oh, I'm sure some don't need to be told here.
But they're all such good stories. They're great stories.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. I think working for them had to be life-changing.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure.
And it's interesting. I stay in touch with so many of the people that worked for them, even though I was 11, 12 years old when they retired.
You retired? Wow.
Yeah. Well, my mother was 40 when I was born.
Okay.
And my dad was 46, so they were, you know, getting, I don't want to say old at that point, because I've surpassed that. But,
back then.
I believe my mother was like 51 when they retired.
Wow.
So, yeah.
I was when I was a kid, I went to visit Mr. Eldridge quite a bit, and I went to, I forget where we met up with your parents. It may have been a CP or a PHA meeting somewhere, and Ted was, I don't know why Ted was going, but I was very young when I first met your mom and dad. I was like 10 or 11, so. But I remember.
Yeah, they're great. They were great people. And, you know, I always remember how humble they were. They never had this, I am somebody air about them. You know, people would say Mr. Forsyth, and he'd say, the name's Bob. Just call me Bob.
So they got together, and now they're showing dogs together. What year did they get together, Jim?
They got married in 1967.
Were they already showing dogs together at that point, though?
They were already showing dogs together. my dad moved. My mother had bought the kennel in Southbury, Connecticut, that I was born at, from the people that she had worked for that owned it. They retired and she bought it. And then shortly thereafter, they got married and he moved in, but they would travel together. Mm-hmm. But my mother being a good Catholic girl, we weren't living together before we got married.
So they were there together. They got married in 67. And then, when did Gray Ireland start?
Gray Ireland started with my grandmother. And my mother used that kennel name all the way through.
Okay.
And I don't believe my dad had a kennel name. If he did, he did not continue to use it once they got married.
No, because that became the famous kennel name. So
that was it. And, you know, of course, nowadays you say Gray Ireland and there's so many people that don't know what it is. But,
That's why we're doing these.
Yes. Yeah. it was a very famous kennel name, and I would love to be able to find out how many champions are under that prefix.
Yeah. How many even just walked on that property? Like you hear stories from Wayne about Porter Acres and whatnot. And
oh, Porter's Acres, yes. Named after Mrs. Porter paid for it to be built. That was 3 acres, chain link fenced in, 6 feet high. And those dogs had a blast.
I'm sure, yeah.
There. So, but beautiful, beautiful paddock for dogs. And, you know, that was a big thing for my parents, was that dogs get enough exercise.
Oh, for sure.
You know, I mean,
God forbid I showed a dog to your mom that wasn't hard. She was like, she give me hell.
And don't let it have toenails either.
Oh, I remember one time I did. I remember a Springer dog I showed to your father, and I had met it at the show and worked on it there. But I didn't get his nails back. And he said, "What's this thing doing, running the Iditarod after the breed?"
Helping you get home. It's pulling the van, Bob. Oh, God. Yes. And dirty teeth. Yeah. That was another one of my mother's.
Yeah.
And I still have people say to me, "Your mother was such a stickler on toenails." And I said, "Yeah, because they were supposed to be done every single week."
And eye boogers.
Oh, yes. And I still do that. I will walk up to a boxer and clean its face off all the time.
Oh, gosh, yeah. If she had to clean it for you while she's going over the dog, she was not happy.
Yes, she had her little quirks that she did not tolerate.
Oh, God. I missed them, though. So you're back at Greyerland. Do you remember Mrs. Porter then?
I do remember Mrs. Porter. When my mother would find a dog for Mrs. Porter, it wasn't carte blanche, "Oh, Janie found me a dog." We drove the dog into the city. Mrs. Porter came down from her house. I believe it was a penthouse. And my mother would move the dog down the sidewalk, and then she'd stand with Mrs. Porter, and I'd move the dog down the sidewalk, and then we'd go to lunch, and by the end of lunch, Mrs. Porter would have decided whether that was going to be her next dog or not. You know, as much as she trusted my mother and adored my mother, she still wanted to be a part of that. You know, she was a very interesting lady. I remember her very frail and elderly.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Because I knew her, you know, to the very end. She passed away. But just such a nice lady. And I remember as a kid, she would buy tickets to go to Barnum and Bailey's Circus at the Garden. And we would sit in her box and watch the circus. I remember doing things like that with her. Going to lunch in the city. And it was always a big deal. You know, we're going to see Mrs. Porter.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure. Like I think back, you think on it now, and like her name was Milson O'Boy, you know, that was a standard in Irish setters, you know, and then once you carry it on to all the dogs, your exactly. Mom, Cherry Points Brass and Bold Venture and whatnot, like, it's amazing. For Irish setter people, it's just amazing.
Yes. And, you know, she had certain breeds that she loved. Her Irish setters, she owned a few Afghans. Yeah. I remember she had a Bichon, but, you know, it wasn't any dog my mother wanted to show. Mrs. Porter always wanted to be a part of that. And she was a very interesting lady.
It's amazing. As a kid, I just think back of all those dogs and Rifleman and others, and they were all Mrs. Porter and your mom. You know.
Yes.
I grew up with Irish setters, obviously, so it's like,
oh. Yes. You know, interesting little tidbit. Barbara and Alan Kloss happened to live about 10 minutes from me, along with their daughter that I grew up with, Karen. And it's kind of fun because Karen will introduce me to someone and say, "This is my oldest friend." Because like we that. Both, you know, we're transports down here, so we don't have all of our childhood friends where we live now. And we were growing up together 3, 4, 5 years old all the time at dog shows.
Yeah, that's amazing. So the dogs your dad showed, obviously the Whippets.
Uh-huh.
Let me hear about, do you remember those dogs?
The first one I remember was Charmel's Klansman. He was an English import, and he hated dog shows. He absolutely hated dog shows.
Wouldn't that be so hard?
He did not like anybody that worked for us. He could not stand my mother. He would lift his leg on her chair, on her side of the bed, every chance he got. But he loved me. And he would sleep in my bed at night. And so when the dog retired, I was never allowed to go near the ring. When the dog is in the ring, you stay away from that tent. You don't come anywhere near here. And so the dog retired, and Mr. and Mrs. Butts gave him to me because I was the only one he really liked. I think he tolerated my father, but he really liked me. So I think it was either a regional or the Whippet National came to Westchester, and I asked if I could show him. And of course, I got the lecture, you know. He's not a showman. This is not going to be fun for you. Well, Laird and I made it down to the final two. And the final two were my father and Bowie, which was Sporting Fields Klansman, who my dog had sired, and me and Laird. And they moved us and baited us and moved us and baited us. And finally, Laird went, okay, I've done this enough and I'm done. So of course my dad and we won. And so about a month later, there was a show called Ox Ridge and they were doing another specialty. And I asked if I could show him again. So I walk in the ring and this dog looked up at me and said, I don't like this, and it doesn't matter how much I like you, I am not doing this. And he made a complete fool out of me. I mean, he would barely walk on a lead.
He had enough.
And I learned, yeah, we're not showing Laird anymore. He was my dog till the very last day, and he slept in my bed all the time, and he was a great dog. But if you left him loose in the house, he would find my mother's side of the bed or my mother's chair. And you could put him in my room and he would be clean for 24 hours. I mean, the dog would never make a mistake. But he, for whatever reason, took a dislike to my mother. And, you know, of course, he was not a good eater, so he had to be stuffed. He didn't like anybody that stuffed him. He didn't like anybody that did his nails or cleaned his teeth or gave him a bath. Of course, I didn't do any of those things. So, but that was my first experience with the Whippet. And I have a picture of he and I when I was, I don't know, maybe 8 years old that I'll send you as well. Great dog, beautiful dog, yeah. Absolutely beautiful dog. And I think my dad would say he was probably the best one he ever had.
Really?
But the dog only had three best in shows because he was not a show dog by any means.
Huge difference.
Yes, it does make a huge difference. My dad always called him a sourpuss.
So growing up, we all know of the relationship between your mom and Mrs. Clark, Annie, with Gully, call each other sisters. What kind of impact was she on you growing up as well? Like, was she around a lot, or did you guys get to see on the shows?
Very interesting. I was afraid of no one growing up. I would talk to anybody. As my mother said, I was well socialized. However, when it came to Annie, I would hide behind my mother.
I was afraid of her too. So
literally, I remember walking behind my mother and standing there until they were done talking. And it wasn't until I was a young adult that I would say Annie and I would talk. And we had some great talks. We had a very interesting talk about pointer colors. And she finally looked at me and said, I'm not discussing this with you anymore. But I showed a pointer bitch, not my own, but I showed a pointer bitch to Annie when she did our national. And I'd never seen the bitch before. She was a very, very nice bitch. And believe I got like the first award of merit with her. And in Annie's critique, the first words out of her mouth were very well handled. And that was like everything. Amazing.
Yeah, sure.
You know, that Annie would say such a thing. And I do remember showing in juniors under her and winning and being just totally, wow, she just pointed to me. And knowing that she was like one of my mother's best friends. But yeah, she was a lot intimidating. But I'll tell you a very funny story. My son was showing his miniature wire hair dachshund, and Annie was not well at this point. And he was probably 8 years old. And he's very serious about showing his little dog. And Annie would walk down the lineup of dogs, and then she would be at her table and she would signal the first dog to go around, and then she wouldn't have to walk that far.
Right.
So my son is the first one in the line of like 10 miniature bitches, and he's serious as a heart attack showing his little dog. And he gets around to the table and he puts her up on the table, and Annie of course is right there to go over the dog. And she's 6'4" and he's 3 foot nothing. And he looks up at her and puts his hand up and says, I'm not ready yet. I thought I was going to die. With that, Annie puts her hands down, backs up, waits for him to set his little dog up. And she says, sir, are you ready now? And he says, yes, ma'am. Well, he went on to win a 5-point major. I was having a heart attack because I couldn't believe you said that to her. But she was so good with kids. She really, really was. And, you know, encouraging kids. And again, another teacher that would teach things.
Always.
The ring, you know, and it's so important, I think.
Do you remember the blue English setter bitch I had?
Yes.
She was... Mrs. Clark was so instrumental in me finding her, because I talked to her about English setters and I told her I was looking for one, and she sent me right to that kennel. And she was like, I want you to look at those dogs. And yeah, she was right.
Nice.
Yeah. But she always she was telling you
she
about.
She usually was.
Oh, yeah. And when she was, when you were talking about winning under her and whatnot, I remember that she used to tell me I didn't think on my feet. So I had to learn to think on my feet. That was always her critique of me. I'm like, oh.
Well, you know, those two ladies thought on their feet because their big thing was, we're going to beat the men.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and back then, women didn't win like the men did in this business. And that was their big thing. We're going to beat the men. And boy, did they.
Oh, for sure. But those critiques, yeah. they made a world of difference to me, because it made me think on my feet. It made me think I'm doing something wrong here. So she did, you know.
There's a story about my mother showing a dog in Best in Show, and it had beautiful feet. And so while it wasn't her turn, she sat there and pulled the grass on where all 4 feet were going to be on this dog for the final presentation. So you could see its beautiful feet, and she went Best in Show that night.
I think I've heard that.
Who thinks of things like that?
She was always so great. Whenever I was showing to her, she'd talk to me, and she never discussed much, but she'd say, with a dog that she had done with before, oh, he's still looking good, but there's a dog in here that might be a problem. I'm like, oh. So she always sort of
really. Me. Thanks, Janie.
Yep. try harder though, so don't worry about things. So.
Of course. Well, that's probably what she wanted.
Probably.
And so you sweat a little bit.
If I showed a dog too long in its career, she always told me to. So.
There's a few that need to hear that.
Yeah. No, she was really good at it. And she just said things like, and then sometimes it was time to cut the line, she'd say to me. So, okay.
Yes. Yes. I've had this discussion with several people that campaign dogs. And, you know, years ago when I was growing up, you didn't special a dog more than 2 years. It's sad to me because I think we need to go back and think about what we're doing here. We're here to judge breeding stock. So if this dog, especially a bitch, is being out being campaigned, she's obviously not being bred for the first time at 6 or 7 years old. You know, we need to keep our eye on, we need to worry about what's coming next. And how are we going to get that if we're not breeding these dogs, we keep them in the ring that long?
Yeah. I remember, like I told you earlier about Mr. Eldridge, I remember talking to him one day about nationals and whatnot. He said it was, to him, it was always a sad day when the veteran won the national because it meant we weren't going forward. So,
you know, and that's interesting because I like to see our veterans looking good and holding up at those ages. You know, so many times now we finish a dog at a year old and at a year and a half, it's now our special instead of letting it mature. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting as a judge learning about some of these breeds more in depth than just seeing them in the ring. Some of these breeds don't mature till they're 5, 6 years old.
Well, there's no question, you know. Irish setters,
yeah,
I hate going on it, but Irish setters at 5 are the best they're going to be.
Exactly. But, you know, to me, that's the sign of really good breeding is when you have a 10-year-old in the ring and it looks like a 2-year-old.
Yeah.
You know, I just think that's wonderful. So I understand his perspective, but that's just another perspective on why I do like to see our veterans.
Yeah. So how were mom and dad when you told them you wanted to show dogs? Or was it just a given?
Well, at first I wasn't showing dogs. I went to college. I was not doing that rat race craziness.
What were you going to do?
I wanted to be a graphic designer. And I went to art school and loved every minute of it and have not done any of it since and don't miss it. However, I think dogs are very artistic in a lot of ways.
There's no question.
Breeding, grooming, very artistic stuff. And I think you have to have an eye for it. So after art school, I decided that I was going to, maybe I wanted to be a lawyer. So my father, of course, being the wise man that he was, said, that's a large investment in time and maybe you need to go work for a lawyer to see if you really like it. So I did, and I discovered that I would be a much better prosecutor than a defender. And maybe that wasn't really the way I needed to go. So a friend of mine had gotten a dog and wanted it shown. And so I started going, you know, here and there to little local shows to show this beagle, a red and white wishing well beagle. And so people started asking, oh, are you coming back to showing dogs? Are you coming back to showing dogs? So then kind of thought about it and I went, yeah, you know, yeah, I do want to come back to showing dogs. So I was about 20 years old. I had, you know, worked for a number of handlers through my teen years and came back to showing dogs. And then, you know, everything snowballs. Ended up moving to South Carolina and built a big kennel. And we were doing boarding, grooming, and training. And I was showing out of South Carolina for a while, and you know, had some great dogs. I had some, did some nice winning, but then life got a hold of me, and I had a son, and marriage didn't work out, and my son needed a mother, and that's where that went.
It goes. I understand that.
Absolutely. My parents were 2.5 hours away, so I didn't have a babysitter. Not that my mother sat around long enough to be a babysitter.
Besides your mom and dad, who would you consider your mentors and dogs?
Peter Green, definitely. worked for Paul
not
Edwards.
Your husband, you know?
No, no, not my, not in dogs anyway. Peter Green, I also worked for Richard Bauer and Paul Edwards.
Oh, great.
I Richard mean, Bauer. Just really good.
Those are great guys.
Oh, absolutely. Good. And very different perspectives. Mm-hmm. You know, my mother was all about the business and you make the money and you save the money. And, you know, in those places, and Mark and Bonnie Threlfall, I mean, I still call on Bonnie all the time.
Yeah.
And ask questions. I think Bonnie is probably one of the best dog people I know.
Well, I'm sure.
Great eye for a dog, great breeder, always willing to help and teach. Just really, I just think she's great. And Peter's also wonderful. You know, you can call him and ask him anything, and he'll give you his perspective on, you know, that dog or whatever your question might be.
So do you have any advice for, let's start off with handlers. Do you have any advice for young handlers?
I had an interesting discussion with a young man this week where he was in not a very good situation. And he was unhappy with the person he was working for. And the person, supposedly, I don't know, I was not there, said, I will ruin you and dogs. And I said to this young man, I said, stop right there. I said, the only person that can ruin you and dogs is you. And he was very quiet. And I said, you know, you might get a few people that might listen to the bad mouthing. I said, but people will see you and watch you and make their own decision.
I agree.
So always work hard. Always take care of your dogs first. And always be willing to learn. You know, this fallacy I think people get of, well, you're an expert in this breed. Doesn't mean you can't learn something new.
Exactly. We're always learning. You know?
Absolutely. You know, learning boxers from both my parents, but my mother was the big boxer person, and pointers with my dad. I still, every day, there's something I'm learning about the breeds. And those are two breeds I have been around since, like I said, before I was born. Because my dad always had a hunting dog in the house, and Susie the bitch my mother won the garden with used to live in the house, and then I came along and she didn't like me very much.
Oh no. I didn't know that.
So that didn't last very long. But yeah, I mean, you know, we always had 20 boxers in the kennel, and you know, my dad and I bred pointers together, and it just, you always see something or hear something that you didn't know. And, you know, another person that I think is a wealth of knowledge is Ed Bibben. He's been around forever. He's judged since I think he was 20 years old. You know, just a wonderful man to stand and talk to. And I was doing a sweepstakes in Pomeranians, and I sat down with him and I said, could you please give me a tutorial on Pomeranians, because I'm doing this sweepstakes. And he was wonderful. And just like, we didn't go over any dogs, but we just talked about, you know, what to look for, where to put your hands, feel this, tail sets. And he said, you know, you're going to see a lot of this. It's wrong. You know, it has to be here. And he was, I still think about that day sitting down and talking to him about just one breed,
yeah.
You know, and how much I'd like to go talk to him about more.
I'm sure he'd go on and on, you know.
Oh, absolutely.
So when did you decide you wanted to be a judge?
I was here taking care of my parents. And I was hoping that my mother had more time. And my dad was very worried about her traveling on her own. So I said, how about if I get my judge's license and I can travel with her? Because,
that's a great idea.
You know, my mother was not going to pay for me to travel with her. So I had to find a way that I could do it. And unfortunately, that didn't happen. She passed before that happened. But my dad knew that I was applying and looked at me and said, what is wrong with you? But he knew that I had been approved. I was approved in early August, and he passed the end of September. So I never got to judge a show before he passed, but he knew that I was approved. And I'm not sure he approved of me doing it.
Did they give you advice?
At that point, you know, he had retired for 5 years. Yeah. And he really enjoyed staying home, because the man had never stayed home. You know, he was always traveling. And that was the big thing when he retired. I want to play golf and I want to stay home. And my mother was not about that.
I remember her saying to me, you know, Bob's retired, but I'm not. Don't let your friends up in Canada think I'm retired.
Well, she made me call him. She said, your father is retiring from judging and he's going to die. And I said, he's going to die? Well, he can't just play golf. And I said, I'm pretty sure he can. And so when I asked him why he was retiring, and he explained it, and I said, I get it, Dad. You know, he didn't want people to look at him and say, look at that old man in the ring that doesn't know where he is today. He never wanted that to happen. And he said, and I agree with him. And I said, okay. I said, I agree with you. You do what works for you. And so he retired at Morrison Essex. He did Best in Show. That was his last show. And I think my mother dragged him to a few dog shows after that, but he wasn't in the middle of the ring.
Did either of them give you advice about judging if that's the...
Like I said, Mom didn't know that that's what I was doing. And he really didn't. He was very good about... well, if this is what you want to do, I'll support you in what you want to do, whether I think you should do it or not. But he didn't say a whole lot about it. It's definitely been a learning experience, because it's not like it used to be.
Yeah.
Not like it used to be at all.
So... what do you think? This is going to be a tough question. I'm sorry. What do you think, if they could give you advice now, what would they tell you? About anything about your judging. Like if you could talk to the Bob and Jane of, let's say they were 30, and you're the age you are now, and what advice do you think they would give you?
I think they would encourage me to continue. Because I think this sport needs some new, younger blood that are true dog people in judging. I was amazed to see some of the statistics of the ages of people that are judging and how many, say, breeds or groups they have or don't have. There's very few people under the age of 55 mm-hmm. that have a whole group. And what's going to happen if we don't start getting more mm-hmm. people my age, which is 52, not exactly a spring chicken, but we need more. I had the statistics written down as to how many people, but I want to say we're under 10 people under the age of 55 that have a full group.
No, that's true, and it's. I think it's just as we've gotten older, and the handlers or the exhibitors that want to be a judge, they look at how long it's going to take them, so they weigh the options if they want to go ahead and do it or not. So
exactly, mm-hmm. and it's not a cheap thing to do. I mean, it's expensive to become a judge, but you know, it's not a race. I think it's really important to learn all the individual breeds. And I've seen in the past it become a race. How many dogs, how many breeds can I get in 1 year?
Yeah.
It took me 4.5 to get my first group. And like we've discussed, I've been here for 52 years.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm exactly. And even if I wasn't showing professionally, I still bred dogs. I still always owned a dog. At one point, I tried to go dogless, and I lasted an entire week.
Wow.
It didn't work out too well for me. I have 4 now.
Okay, I have one last question for you, Sue. If you could meet up with the 20-year-old Sue, what advice do you think she would give you?
I'm not sure she would give me advice. I can give her advice. You know, like,
what advice would you give the 20-year-old?
Love to be 21 again.
What advice would you give the 20-year-old?
Don't listen to what everybody else has to say. You know, do your own thing. Do what you think is right. Don't get all caught up in and what everybody else is saying. You know, there was this, my mother said to me one day, because I said, you know, I hear this about myself and I hear that about myself and blah, 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 blah. And my mother said, well, you're obviously doing something right because they're talking about you. And I never thought about it like that. I just thought about, you know, I hear all this stuff that's not true. And she said, you know, they're only talking about someone that's winning. They're not talking about someone that's losing.
Well, let's face it, your last name puts you under a microscope. There's no question.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And that was not easy growing up like that. Sure. You know, you couldn't make typical kid mistakes and people would say, oh, that's just a kid.
No,
it's no, that was Bob and Jane's daughter.
It was Megan.
And God forbid she's human as well.
Yeah.
We all make mistakes and you know, you have to love what you do, because if you don't love this, you're going to get tired really right. quick. It is a 24/7 job. You are married to it, whether you want to be or not, you know, so you have to make that huge commitment. And I'm not sure a lot of people can make that commitment.
Exactly. No, I agree. And you see it, they come in waves. They'll be in dogs for 5 to 7 years and they may disappear. The ones that last longer are the ones like us that are still
Exactly. Now, when are you going to start judging, Will?
Well, I was going to start and then this pandemic happened and it didn't afford me the chance to start because I had to make a living. So.
Yes, I understand. I understand. Hopefully soon we'll be able to get out of this.
I hope so too. My gosh. I've been stuck up here for how long? Not stuck up here, but I've been up here for how long without going down and seeing all my friends south of the border. So
that's got to be the hardest part for all of us, is not being able to see the people we love to see. You know, Pete and I have made the journey to Michigan every other year or the past few years to see some very dear friends. And, you know, who knows when that will happen again.
Yeah. And I was watching the coverage of the Orlando shows, and it made me think, oh, I wish I was there. Then everyone I spoke to, including yourself, was like, oh, no, it's not the same. It's not the same. You know?
Yeah, it really wasn't. It really wasn't. And it was kind of sad, you know.
And the show was great. What we saw was the dogs were great, but I think the atmosphere at ringside, that's part of it, you know. It is.
It's the excitement.
Right.
When you're with a group of people and you're all talking about dogs and this dog in the ring and that dog in the ring and, oh, my God, did you see that one that didn't make it here? It's that kind of stuff that I think gets it really electric.
Well, there's no question. It's like watching sporting events on TV now. There's no crowd, so it's...
Yeah, you get to watch cardboard people.
Maybe we should have done that, of all the people that should be there. That'd be hilarious.
Exactly. But, yeah, I mean, that was the sad part this year. But, you know, I'm still glad that they were able to have it.
Yeah, me too. It was good to see all the dogs.
And I think Westminster will be very interesting this year. To me, it won't be the garden.
I know. It looks like it's going to be beautiful and glamorous, but I like the dirty old New York.
Well, we used to make a trip out of it, but, you know, were you ever at the Westchester shows when they were held there?
No, I was never.
Okay. Beautiful, beautiful grounds. I remember Westchester being held there till I was, probably 23, 24 years old.
I don't know why I never did then.
Absolutely gorgeous grounds. You're right near the Tappan Zee Bridge. Just an amazing place. But like I said, it's not the garden. You know, it's still Westminster. It's just not the garden.
I even miss the breed judging at the garden. I miss being in line at 4 o'clock and rushing to our spot to get our spot.
Yes.
All that stuff.
Yes.
I don't miss being there at that point, but I miss that part of it. You know, the mystique of it all. You know,
it's exciting.
It is.
You know, I used to pack for a week before we would go. And you have to go shopping and, you know, we would see shows and go to different restaurants. And so, you know, it'll be interesting.
Yeah.
It will be very interesting.
I'm looking forward to it still. So.
Oh, absolutely. And I hope you can come.
Oh, I hope so. I'll be there no matter what. Because I can fly down there, it just means I'd have to quarantine when I got home. So for Westminster, I would definitely be there. So.
Good.
Okay, well, I'm going to let you go. Thank you for your time. So it's great to see you as always.
Great to see you. Thank you for having me.
And thanks for sharing memories about your mom and dad, because we all miss them horribly.
Absolutely.
And I'm happy you did this for us. And I hope you have a Merry Christmas.
Thank you. You too. Merry Christmas, Will. And I hope to see you soon. I'll get some of those pictures to you.
I appreciate that, Sue. You take care.
All right, dear. You too. Bye now.
What did I tell you? That was great, Sue. Thank you so much for reminiscing with us, and we love hearing about you and your mom and dad. Those are amazing times. So if you like what we're doing here, make sure you press the like, share, and subscribe button. If you want to get a hold of me, you can get a hold of me at dogshowtips@gmail.com. Or if you just want to find out what's happening in Will's world, go to willalexander.net. All right. Have a great holidays, and I hope to see you all soon.